It's a very broad subject, so it will be a bit superficial concerning the different revolutions and that happened in this period of the Third International. So I hope that maybe some of the comrades can come in with the experience of the German Revolution, of the British general strike and so on, because I want to try and focus on the broad processes of the development of the Third International, and that is closely linked to what happened in the Soviet Union and the struggle against Stalinism and the rise of Trotskyism and the Fourth International. I think we had a discussion in the last session about the First and Second International about leadership, and I think leadership is basically the experience of the working class from its history, and to take the essence of this experience and make it conscious. And this is why these kind of discussions, I think, is very important for our comrades, in order to learn from the mistakes and the successes of revolutionaries before ourselves, so we might not make the same mistakes, and we don't have to. I don't know if you can say it in English, but in Danish you say we don't invent the deep plate one more time when it has been invented. But you learn actually from
reinvent the wheel.
Yes, reinvent the wheel in English. The third. Maybe I should just let people sit down. Yes, this is a warm room, so everybody comes over here.
There's a couple more chairs just over there if you need them.
The Third International was formed in 1919 in the revolutionary ferment following the First World War and the Russian Revolution. And it existed in more or less 25 years and developed, as I said, along with the development of the USSR. It was very closely linked to the developments inside the USSR, the Soviet Union. Yes. You can say, we just discussed the First and the Second International in the previous session. Some of you were there, some of you weren't. But the end of the Second International, which was a mass workers' international that was started on a Marxist basis, it actually collapsed with the outbreak of the First World War. When the First World War broke out in 1914, all the parties, almost, not all of them, but almost all of them, of the Second International, even though they, in 1912, had voted to go against a world war with the strikes in every country, they voted for the war credits, actually supporting the national bourgeoisie in the slaughter of workers of other countries, and completely defying all the ideas of internationalism and of revolution. And this was really a big defeat and a complete collapse in the Second International. There was very few who actually opposed the war in the German parliamentary group, the Social Democratic Parliamentary Group in Germany. There was the first time the war credits were voted on. There was not one who voted against. Liebknecht and others voted or abstained because of party discipline. And later on, it was only Liebknecht who actually voted against the war credit in the German parliament. This changed later. But in the beginning, when the war broke out, there was a general, which is always normal in the beginning of a war, hysteria and patriotism and nationalism, and especially when the workers' leaders were supporting the war, then the general mood was a mood of protecting your fatherland, if you can say so. In 1915, those who were actually internationalists and who opposed the war met at a conference in Zimmerwald. And now it has been said in many sessions, but I want to say it anyway, that Lenin had this joke that the true internationalists of the world could be in two train wagons, stage coaches, I think, is the same. But what I think is important in this is to remember that they also started as a tiny group, but they kept to the correct ideas and stood firm on the principles. And by sticking to this and working in the correct way, they formed in a very few years. They succeeded in the Russian Revolution, and they formed a mass revolutionary international. at the Zimmerwald Congress, there was a lot of different people, a lot of strange ideas, pacifist ideas, even though there were not that many people, there was a lot of strange ideas. But there was a radical wing that crystallized around the Bolsheviks, Lenin, people like Luxembourg, like Liebknecht, some Dutch left socialists, and some Scandinavian youth leaders also. And what we saw was that the breakdown of imperialism that was obvious in the First World War was followed by a revolutionary wave all around Europe, not just in Russia, but in many countries. And most importantly, of course, in the Russian Revolution in 1917, where the workers took power with the Bolsheviks in the lead, leading this revolution to success. And what the Russian Revolution was, as Lenin put it, was capitalism breaking down at its weakest link, not as Marx had thought that it would be at its strongest places, but at the weakest link. But this has had very important repercussions for the international also. What the Bolsheviks and what Lenin and Trotsky was very clear about from the beginning and from before the revolution was that the Russian Revolution is not the end of it. The Russian Revolution can only succeed if it is the spark that sparks off a revolutionary wave in the rest of the world, because Russia alone is so backward that you cannot in any way begin to think about creating socialism in Russia without having the technology, the development of industry that you have, especially in Germany and in the advanced capitalist country. So from the beginning, they were very clear that the Russian Revolution can only be the beginning of a world revolution. And if the revolution is not spread, the Russian Revolution will be defeated and will collapse. And the Russian Revolution was followed by a revolutionary wave. And the most important example, I think, was in Germany in 1918-1919. Which I think that this period in Germany is very important for all comrades to read about and to study. And I think you can buy this book by Rob Sewell in this bookstall. And it's very good. It's called Germany, From Revolution to Counter-Revolution. But what happened in 1918 in Germany was that the workers and the soldiers, they rose up. The soldiers in the fleet in the Nordic Sea, they mutinied, took over some of the warships, they took over some of the barracks, they put up red flags, they created soldiers' councils, and it spread like a wildfire throughout Germany, where the workers and the soldiers set up councils to take over power, actually. I can't go into the details of this, but the problem was, also relating to the discussion in the previous session, was that there was a very powerful leadership of the workers' movement, but it was the leadership of the reformists, of the really right reformists of the Social Democratic Party, who did everything they could to betray this movement. And the revolutionary leadership had not been built in enough time to be put forward as an alternative to the reformist leadership. Some on the of the left wing, they criticized Luxembourg and Liebknecht for not creating a revolutionary, an independent revolutionary party earlier. But the problem was actually that they hadn't created a tendency inside the Social Democratic Party, as the Bolsheviks had done since 1903 in the Russian Social Democratic Party. They had put forward their revolutionary ideas. They had criticized the reformist ideas of Bernstein, of Kautsky, especially Rosa Luxemburg, but she had not created a tendency inside the Social Democratic Party, building up cadres, educating other people, but only loosely gathered together those who agreed with her, but in a loosely organized group. And if you stand in the middle of a revolution, as they did in 1918-1919, then you cannot create on the spot a leadership that is well organized and can play an alternative to the already existing leadership that was in the Social Democrats in the reformist organization. So the Communist Party was actually formed during the revolution, And it was composed of very young, unexperienced people, very revolutionary, very honest, but also very young and inexperienced. And especially after Luxembourg and Liebknecht was murdered in 1919 by the on the orders of the leadership of the Social Democratic Party, they were murdered, and the Communist Party was beheaded of the most experienced leaders of the organization, and this actually devoided the German Revolution, its leadership and a conscious leadership, and it led to its defeat. It was not the final defeat, I will go into that later, but for now, in 1919, the workers of Germany was defeated temporarily. After this revolutionary wave, not only in Germany, but also in other countries, the idea and the necessity of forming a Third International became even more acute. It was clear that the question of the revolution, of the proletarian revolution, was on the order of the day in many countries, and there was a real need to have an organization, an international, a revolutionary international. In January 1918, a conference was held to discuss the issue, and in March 1919, the Third International was formed. This is also, the Third International is also known as the Comintern, for Communist International. For a long time I was a bit confused about that, but this is one and the same thing. At the founding Congress, there was 51 delegates from 29 countries. At this stage, it was mostly small groups who affiliated to the International, and the Germans, for example, they were against the forming of the International. They thought it was premature, But it went ahead anyway, because especially the Bolsheviks, Lenin said, it was absolutely necessary to have a clear, an organization, an international organization on a clear program for proletarian revolution, for socialist revolution. Yes. But it was mainly small groups, besides the Bolsheviks and the Norwegian Arbeiderpartiet. It was only the Bulgarian and the Finnish party that actually represented real parties at this founding Congress. The rest was just groups. On the agenda was the question of the proletarian revolution, the struggle for proletarian democracy, the question of Soviets and the power of Soviets versus bourgeois democracy. And it was here that the foundation for creating a revolutionary international was laid. The Russian Revolution had a really inspiring effect on the workers of all countries, and also the opposition against the war grew stronger and stronger inside the Social Democratic Party in Germany, for example. Already beginning in 1915-16, a larger and larger group was against supporting the war, began also to vote against supporting the war. And inside all the mass organizations, the reformist mass organizations, you could see a growing opposition to the war and a growing attraction to the Russian Revolution and that example to end the war and also all the decrees that they put forward from the Soviet government, collectivization of land, workers' control, ending of the war, and so on, had this electrifying effect on the workers. And this, after the founding of the Third International, this led in many countries to mass splits of the traditional organizations on exactly the question of supporting the Russian Revolution, i.e. supporting Soviet power against the bourgeois democracy, against capitalism. And out of this was created mass communist parties in the most important countries, in Germany, France, Italy, Norway, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, and other countries. Yes, and in 1921, the non-Russian parties of the Third International had 1.2 million members, which was twice as many as the Russian Communist Party. This was reversed in 1928, where the Russian Communist Party had 1.2 million members and the rest had 440,000 members. So you could see it was not just in the Soviet Union, but it was all over the world that the workers was attracted to the ideas of revolution. The revolution revolutionary wave was still spreading. In Italy in 1920, there were factory occupations, which was also defeated. And in the midst of this, in July and August 1920, there was the second Congress of the Third International, with the 217 delegates from 41 countries, so you could see it was also spreading to more countries. And here, of course, also the perspective for world revolution was discussed. A program was adopted to support the Soviet Union to fight for a proletarian world revolution. And also another thing was discussed, which was the conditions for acceptance into the Third International, because it was also clear that many more centrist is the current insight that develops in revolutionary situations inside the labor movement, where mass currents and also leaders and individuals move from either from reformism towards Marxism, towards revolutionary ideas, or the other way. You have to look also at the direction. But it's common in a revolutionary situation that mass tendencies arise inside all the workers' parties that become centrist and move in the direction of revolution. And inside the reformist parties, there was also, for those who stayed, a mass attraction to the Soviet Union. And some of the leaders who were reformist also saw this as quite convenient, applying for membership of the Third International as some kind of left cover to be, how, this is a bit strange to say, but to be popular with the masses who moved in direction and supported the Soviet Union and wanted also a revolution. So and also there were some of the mass parties like the Norwegian Arbeiderpartiet, who, where the majority had voted in favor of going into the Third International, but there were still quite big reformist minorities inside these organizations. And what the leadership of the Third International said, and what was the discussion at this second Congress, was that in the midst of a revolutionary situation, it's absolutely vital that we have a clear program for revolution, that we have a clear program for fighting for an international world revolution. So these theses that had to be accepted for parties and organizations to be adopted into the Third International made it clear that the Third International was a communist international. The organizations belonging to the international should call themselves communist parties of this or that country. They should fight for the dictatorship of the proletariat, not only in words, but also in actions. And this didn't just apply to the parties, but also to the individuals inside these organizations. And also, and I think this is also important, that those parties in the Third International should also support the struggle for liberation in the colonies or in oppressed nations, not least in those countries where the countries were imperialist and suppressing other countries. Then it was even more important to fight against imperialism and to fight for the freedom and support the freedom struggles of the colonies of these countries. Yes. So this was the main basis of the second Congress and what happened in the period up to also the third Congress. What happened from in this period from 1970 and to 20 or something, there was this revolutionary wave. But with the defeat in Germany, the defeat in Italy, it started to ebb, the revolutionary wave. And when the Third Congress was held in 21, June, July 21, it was obvious that it was not the immediate task of the day to take power. It could be in a year, in 2 years, but it was not the immediate task post for most of the communist parties. And the policy of United Front was established. which meant to have joint ranks for the workers across party lines. Yes, and what this also came out of was that what we saw in the Third International was that many of those who were attracted to the communist ideas was, which is still the case, and I think will always be the case, mainly young people, mainly people who have who are appalled by the leaders of the reformist organization, who betrayed the movement. They get attracted to communist ideas, and this is a good thing. Lenin said those who have the youth has the future, but it's also clear that they have less experience, and there can be a tendency to a certain mood of impatience. And now there had been defeat, we have to find another way to make the revolution happen. We have to find a shortcut. We have to make it happen now, because we have been waiting for a young person. 3 years can seem like a long time. We have been waiting for a long time. We have to do something. And this was the mood in many of the sections of the International. Lenin wrote the book, what is it called in English? Left Wing?
Communism and infantile.
Yes, exactly. to combat these ideas inside the movement. And what he said was that in many ways it was a healthy expression in support of the revolution, but it was not it was not enough to have a want for revolution. You had to absorb all the experience of the previous period, and not least of the Russian revolution and of the Bolsheviks. And the problem was, and this was one of the concrete, very important discussions at the Third Congress, was that in March in 21 in Germany, there had been the so-called March Action. The theory of the offensive was promoted at this time, not just by the leaders of the German Communist Parties, but also of the advisors of the Communist Parties from the Comintern, among others, a guy called Béla Kun, who had been one of the leaders of the Hungarian Revolution, which I think some people know more about than I do. And what their idea was, what this theory of the offensive was that the communists should try and electrify the workers, to push the workers into revolutionary action by themselves starting this revolutionary action by an armed uprising. And then by this armed uprising, they would electrify the workers into taking power. And you should all the time, as a communist, be in the offensive. And if you read the history of the Bolsheviks and of the Russian Revolution, you can see that being a revolutionary is not just saying all the time, forward, forward, forward. Actually, quite the opposite. In June and July in 1917 in Russia, the Bolsheviks many times had to say to the workers of Petrograd, you have to hold back, we have to explain and explain and explain and win the rest of the working masses and the peasant masses in Russia to the ideas of proletarian revolution. We have to win the majority of the masses for our ideas before we can take power. A small group cannot even, not even how determined it is, cannot take power and cannot electrify anybody into doing anything. Yes, so this clearly led to a defeat. Many were killed, and it widened the gap between the young, inexperienced forces of communism and the broad masses of workers who still followed reformism, not least after the defeats in 1918-19 and later. So this was a very big discussion at the Third Congress. The Congress was actually on the verge of a split. Lenin said that he placed himself of the right wing of the of the Congress, as opposed to the ultra-lefts. And he actually threatened to split the International if this policy was adopted as the official policy of the International. He together with Trotsky, managed to convince, through arguments, the delegates of the Russian delegation, and thereby winning the majority inside the Congress at the Third at the Third Congress. And what Lenin and Trotsky explained was that there are periods where the revolution moves forward, and there are periods of revolutionary ebb when the revolution are defeated. And in these periods, it is absolutely necessary that the communists go, the revolutionaries go, together with the workers at the workplaces, at the factories, at the trade unions, where they are, to fight for the daily demands in a united front with the workers of all political colorings, of the reformist workers, and in this way to conquer the masses through explanation and through joint struggle. So this broad united front tactic. And the slogan of this Congress ended after this struggle against ultra-leftism to be the go to the masses and fight and explain the ideas. Yes. Yes. And I think this what happened in Germany was, I think in these years, in many ways, the essence of the developments in many countries, and also it showed that the communist parties in many of the countries, in many of the sections of the Third International, was very young and unexperienced. And I think this should be, you can say, either a warning or in management language, a motivating factor for all of us who are here. That we should try and absorb the experiences of all these struggles now, before we are put to the test, because you don't decide when the revolution is coming, when the revolutionaries are put to the test, but you decide how well prepared you are before this happened, and this is the only thing you can actually do something about. So then it's up to us to do it. Yes, the Fourth Congress took place in 22, in November, and it confirmed this tactic of the United Front. And it was just before a revolutionary wave once again opened up in Germany in 1923. After the First World War, the peace treaty of Versailles was really crippling the nation who was defeated in the First World War, which was Germany. And the German capacity to produce, and Germany stopped paying reparations to the French government, which they were entitled to according to the Versailles Treaty, but the Germans couldn't pay, and this led France to invade the Ruhr district. Is that called that in English? Yeah. Ruhr. Okay. Yes. And a complete collapse in the German economy, because the Ruhr district was the most industrialized district of Germany. So when they occupied it they occupied the heartland of German industry. The German bourgeoisie did what they could to unload the burden of this on the German workers and the German middle class. There was hyperinflation. I don't know, in school I saw pictures of German workers in this period going to buy a bread with a wheelbarrow of money because the prices increased so rapidly. A loaf of bread costed 0.63 mark, Deutschmark, in 1918, and in November 1923 it had risen in price to 201 million Deutschmark. And I'm sure that the wages of the German workers did not rise in the same scale. So this was the background of a revolutionary development, revolutionary mood developing once more in Germany. And actually Brandtler, the then leader of the Communist Party, said that there were signs that a revolutionary movement was stirring. We had the majority of workers behind us temporarily. And in this situation, they actually thought they could take power. But after the March action and the putsch, the theory of the offensive, they hadn't drawn the correct lessons. They hadn't drawn all the lessons and absorbed them. So they became quite the opposite of what they what they were in 21, they became hesitant. And even though they spoke about, at some point, they began to speak about the need for an armed offense, preparation of armed struggle to take power, they didn't do it. And one thing is, it's very easy to say, we should have an armed uprising and take power. But if you don't prepare, if you don't do anything, this is why the Russian Revolution was so relatively peaceful. The taking of power was because, as Trotsky said, 9/10 of the work was done before they actually took power, by winning over the soldiers, by winning over the barracks politically, by preparing for taking over power. So taking over power was more or less just, I think he says somewhere, an afterthought of all the preparation. You can't just stand on the day and say, now, you have to have a period where you prepare. And they didn't do this. And actually, those who, I think it was Stalin, one of the leaders of the Comintern at this point said, we shouldn't encourage them to take power because it would probably be a defeat. But what is that might be true. Maybe it would have ended in a defeat. But what is even worse than a defeat after you have tried is not trying. That is even more demoralizing. And also, we had in the previous session a discussion about, I think, the Paris Commune and the Liverpool struggles. If there is a revolutionary movement, you can't just stay back as revolutionaries and say, nah, we think it's going to be defeated. Nobody will ever follow you ever again if you don't take the lead, if you don't try, and if you don't use it to raise the level and the experience of the masses, then you are finished as a revolutionary force, or at least for a period. And also it's clear that a revolutionary situation cannot last indefinitely. Trotsky, after this, after the revolution in Germany in 1923, he wrote the book called Lessons of October, which is really, really important, where he tries to take the experience from the Russian Revolution and use it also on the experience of the German Revolution. And what he says is sometimes it can be a matter of days or weeks where the revolution is decided. It's clear it's a long process before that happens, but when the revolution reaches its peak, you can't just say, well, we do it tomorrow. You have to act now, and that is actually the reason why you need a leadership, as we also discussed earlier. Yes. And the Communist Party, they didn't act in a bold manner. Instead, they hesitated, and the moment were lost without them even trying really to take power. And it had, of course, a really demoralizing effect, both on the German workers, on the workers of the rest of Europe and the world, and not least inside the Soviet Union, where the workers of the Soviet Union had been struggling, first with the civil war, and the German defeat in 1918, where they really hoped that now help would come from the developed world. They were left alone. There was the civil war, the invasion of 21 foreign armies. And once more, every revolution they saw was defeated. So it had a really demoralizing effect inside the Soviet Union. And it was at this time that Lenin was very sick for the last years of his life. And he died in January 1924 of a heart stroke, I think. I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. But before Lenin died, he was increasingly alarmed of the development inside the Soviet Union and inside the Communist Party. He saw in an increasingly bureaucratic tendency being formed and rising and creeping in all the pores of Soviet state and Soviet society and in the Bolshevik Party. And already in 23, he began to form a bloc together with Trotsky against the rising bureaucracy inside the first and foremost the Bolshevik Party, and said that he had prepared, in his own words, a bomb for the Congress. But he died before the Congress, and what he had the bomb was actually his testament, where he described this bureaucratization, the dangers in it, that it should be combated, and also where he recommended that Stalin should be removed as the general secretary of the Bolshevik Party, because he saw in him concentrating, being the essence of the bureaucratization and also of the nationalist chauvinism that was also creeping in inside the Bolshevik Party, which was really against every idea of internationalism that had ever existed in the Bolshevik Party. But this testament was repressed by the leading, those who took over leadership in the Bolshevik Party, and I don't think it was publicized before up in the 60s or something. Yes, but it's reprinted in Lenin and Trotsky, what they really stood for, I think. When Lenin died, the Troika, not to be confused with the Troika today, but the Troika in the Bolshevik Party, Stalin, Zinoviev, and Kamenev became leaders of the party. And who were these people? Stalin, during the Russian Revolution, there is almost no sources that describe that he had any role during the revolution. Zinoviev and Kamenev had publicly gone out against the armed insurrection, against taking power in October 1917, and was admitted into the party after, for supporting the revolution, of course. But this Troika invented the myth of Trotskyism as being something opposed to Leninism, because Trotsky was the main... He had been one of the main leaders of the revolution together with Lenin, and in order to consolidate their power, they had to create the myth that Trotsky was something different than Lenin. And it became very clear that what was actually different from the ideas Lenin had stood for was the ideas of Stalin. In 1924, Stalin for the first time put forward the so-called theory of socialism in one country. And this was really the complete opposite of what every Marxist from Marx onwards, including Stalin until 1924, had ever said. All the Marxists had said, like Lenin and Trotsky did, on the verge of the Russian Revolution, that the only way you can build socialism is through an international world revolution. The only Workers have no fatherlands, they only have the working class. I don't remember the exact quote. But this has been one of the core things. Capitalism is international, and so has so is the working class, and they have to be internationalist. And Trotsky warned at this time that this theory, if it gained ground in the Bolshevik Party and in the Comintern, in the Third International, would lead to the nationalist degeneration of all the sections of the Comintern. And this is what happened. And if you look at the process has gone on for a long time. If you look at what the Stalinists say today in Greece, for example, it is clearly nationalist. We just need to go out of the euro. There's nothing progressive in the euro, but there's nothing progressive in Greek capitalism or Danish capitalism or whatever capitalism alone. So complete, and this process set in already in 1924 with this nationalist degeneration, because it's clear if you can build socialism in one country, why use all the energy to fight for socialism in other countries? And the workers had already taken power in the Soviet Union, and if they could build socialism themselves, why wasn't that the main objective? To try and build socialism, and then when socialism was built, it would be a shining example for the workers in the rest of the world, and then they would follow this example. So we didn't have to fight for socialism in other countries, we should just put all our efforts into building socialism inside the Soviet Union. Of course, this was completely impossible and utopia. It would be impossible in any country, but in a country like the Soviet Union, that was really backward, it was even more impossible than it would have been in Germany or something. And it was on the basis of this isolation, because of the defeats of the revolutions, especially in Germany, that this bureaucratic caste inside the Soviet Union could come to power. And because of the situation inside the Soviet Union, it's quite a big subject, but it was on the basis of the complete backwardness of the Russian Revolution and the isolation that this caste, a privileged caste, there was not enough for everybody. There was only enough that a small group could get enough to live a decent life in this period. And also they began more and more concerned with having had enough of revolutionary turmoil. It was time for peace and order. It was time to concentrate on the Soviet Union and to secure their own privileges. Yes, and it's clear the destiny of the Third International was completely linked to the destiny of the USSR and the Bolshevik Party. The Russian Revolution had an extreme prestige inside the Comintern, and also the Bolsheviks were the leading theoreticians in the International. And it's clear that this degeneration in the Soviet Union, the theory of socialism in one country, marked a sharp shift inside the Third International also. Yes, in Russia, what had been introduced already when Lenin was alive was a step, because the Russian Revolution had been isolated, the Bolsheviks had said they had to take a step back. They had to introduce some elements of some bourgeois elements or market elements in order to get the peasants producing and in order to begin production. What is called the new economic policy, or the NEP. And it was a step back, but it was in the context of the proletariat having power, and in the context of fighting for a world revolution. Yes, but it was clear inside Russia at this time that the NEP was beginning to spiral out of control. The rich peasants grew richer, and the speculators inside the cities also began to be stronger and stronger, and there was a clear threat of capitalism being restored on this basis inside Russia, inside the Soviet Union. And Trotsky began from around 24, I think, to criticize this and say we have to stop this. What needs to be done is to introduce five-year plans for industrialization of Russia, and in this place, and on the basis of this, you can use this industry to develop also agriculture, and begin also to create, by example, a collectivization of agriculture. We have to go against these tendencies to a capitalist restoration, and it was completely discharged by Stalin and the leaders of the Bolshevik Party. As being completely utopian and super industrialists and so on. But it was on this basis of this policy, and also the demand for a democratic party regime, that the left opposition was formed by Trotsky and began to build up inside the Soviet Union. On the international plane in this period, the struggle between what became Stalinism and Trotskyism is basically the defense of Marxism against the ideas of Stalinism, was first and foremost the Chinese Revolution in 25 to 26, 27. In China, the only workers' party was the Communist Party, and they had a dominating influence on the working class in China. And many of the peasants in China saw to Russia as an example, so they could be one to revolution. But what the Comintern did was to urge or order the Chinese Communist Party leadership into a front with the nationalist bourgeois Chiang Kai-shek. And they even adopted the Kuomintang, who was not a workers' party in any way, into the Third International, and put Chiang Kai-shek as a member of the international leadership, the KKI. with only one vote against, which was Trotsky's, who said this this is not what Lenin always have said, is the working class should have independence from all other parties. We should not submit the working class to a liberal nationalist bourgeoisie. And they warned against this policy. And in the end, Chiang Kai-shek completely betrayed the revolution and drowned the Chinese workers in blood. And yes, so this policy was led to a complete disaster, not necessarily consciously from the leadership of the Comintern, but as a mistake. And this moved back to strengthening the bureaucracy inside the Soviet Union. Because it even further demoralized the workers in their demand for democracy and for, yes, and an end to the bureaucracy. In 26 in Britain, more or less the same policy on a completely different context. I hope maybe some of the British comrades can come in. But the British TUC, which is the same as the LO in Scandinavian countries, the main trade union federation, went into an alliance with the Soviet trade unions in the Anglo-Russian Trade Union Committee. And the bureaucracy inside the Soviet Union saw this committee as a tool to create an alliance against attacks on the Soviet Union. And the TUC leadership saw it as a convenient left cover for their reformist policies. And in 26 in Britain, there was an unprecedented radicalization in British society, which led to a general strike in 26. And what the Communist Party and the Third International should have done was to prepare the workers that the reformist leadership would betray and put forward another way, an alternative leadership. But what they did was to give this leadership of the TUC, when they betrayed, a left cover by staying in this Anglo-Russian committee. And it was not until a year later that it was the leadership of the TUC who broke up this committee, and not the Stalinists. And it's clear, or the Comintern, that this both demoralized many of the Communist Party members in Britain, and also, discredited them in the eyes of many of the workers who had participated in this struggle. So these defeats were a direct consequence of the policies of Stalin and the Third International, but paradoxically, it increased the power of the bureaucracy inside the USSR and therefore in the Third International. And the left opposition, who had warned against and protested against this policy, was expelled from the party and the international. In 27, the 15th Party Congress of the Bolshevik Party was held, and the main theme of this party was the expulsion of this Congress was the expulsion of the left opposition. And in 27 later, Trotsky was deported to Central Asia, and 2 years later he was expelled from the Soviet Union and began his search for a country who would give him a visa. But what happened inside the USSR was an alarming growth in the rich peasants, the kulaks, and the capitalists, the speculators inside the cities, and it was beginning to undermine the whole foundation of also the bureaucracies and their privileges. So they also began to see the danger. Stalin and the bureaucracy panicked and took up, now they had expelled the left opposition, they took up a caricature of the policies of the left opposition. They introduced 5-year plans in 4 years. Everybody had to work faster. Forced collectivizations and so on. And even though it wasn't a disaster in many ways, it also created a massive growth in the economy for many years. This ultra-left swing inside the Soviet Union was also reflected in the Third International, in the Comintern. They said in 28 that the capitalist stabilization that had been going on from 23-24 was ended a year before the crisis actually started. But they said now the stabilization has ended, and in 28, on the 9th plenum of the EKKI, they launched the idea of the so-called third period of capitalism. The first had been revolutionary period, then a stabilization of capitalism, and now the third period had come. The final collapse of capitalism was on the agenda. Yes, and the main enemy now, the main thing that held up capitalism was the Social Democrats. They were the main enemy of the workers and of the communists, and they were termed as social fascists and should be fought as fascists should be fought. And this was the task of the day of all communists, was to first and foremost fight the Social Democrats, i.e. the social fascists. Now suddenly, after the Third International should have a congress according to its statutes every year. There hadn't been a congress in 4 years. Now suddenly it was very convenient for the leaders to convey a congress. And it was called in 28 the Sixth Congress. And here this this idea of the third period was adopted. And also the theory or the program of socialism in one country was put forward and accepted. Trotsky, he formulated a criticism of the program, which is in the Third International after Lenin. But it was never officially distributed to any of the members. But by accident, I think it was some of the translators at the Congress, they had official translators, professional translators, translated it and accidentally distributed it to some of the delegates, among others some of the American delegates, who got a hand of this criticism of the proposed program and read it and found out they actually agreed with Trotsky. And in this way, the first foundations for creating the left opposition outside Russia on an international level was laid. But what happened here in 29 to 33 was that the world was hit by the Great Depression, a complete collapse, a complete crisis. Especially Germany was hit very hard. There were 8 million unemployed in Germany. And fascism began to get a mass base in the German middle class, who had lost after the defeats of the workers in the 20s. They had lost confidence in the working class that they could offer a solution. And in the elections in 1930, the Nazis got almost 6.5 million votes. And in the beginning, the Third International actually welcomed Hitler's victory. And they said, after Hitler, it is our turn. The main enemy is the social fascists. And when Hitler increases his support, it shows that the social fascists are losing support. And what this theory of social fascism meant was that the Communist Party in Germany and other places fought the Social Democrats. For example, they went with the Nazis to social democratic meetings, to trade union meetings, and they broke them up violently. And in 31, Hitler organized in Prussia a referendum against the Social Democratic Regional Government, and the communists went into this with the Nazis to have a referendum against to get the Social Democratic Government down and have new elections. Luckily, they didn't succeed in this campaign. And this was exactly on the direct advice from Stalin and the Third International. In 33, Hitler came to power without any organized opposition from what was actually the best organized working class in the world, and the strongest Communist Party outside of Russia. In the 23 elections, the Communist Party, in November, I think, there were several elections in 23, the Communist Party got 6 million votes. The Social Democrats got 7.2 million votes, and Hitler, the National Socialist, had 11.7 million votes, which shows that the workers' parties, and this is after they have completely betrayed and so on, had around 2 million votes more, I think. at least more votes than the social, the National Socialists, the Nazis, and other parties who were not Nazis either had 7 million votes. So it was actually 2/3 who were not the Nazis. But because of this split in the workers' organizations, because there was no organized opposition against the Nazis, Hitler could take power. I think, I don't know if it was Trotsky who wrote, without even a window pane was broken, but it was just accepted, more or less. The left opposition criticized this theory of social fascism and demanded that the Comintern should use the united front tactic that Lenin had advocated, and they started an international campaign around this demand. And Hitler coming to power was the direct result of the policies of the Third International, from the defeats in 23 and this crazy ideas of the third period. And there was not a single section in the Third International who raised any criticism of this policy and of Hitler coming to power. And this was the moment when Trotsky said, up till then, the left opposition had been considered themselves, as the name suggests, a left opposition inside the Third International, even though they had been expelled, even though there had been they had been killed, sent to work camps, expelled, and so on. They still considered themselves as an expelled left opposition of the Communist International. But this was the point where Trotsky said, the Third International is dead as a progressive force. It is time to try and build a new international, and the work to build the Fourth International was begun. In the beginning, the left opposition international was made of up of primarily people who had been expelled from the Third International, but especially the rise of fascism and so on began to attract people from also the reformist parties and so on and other organizations. And it also began a process of radicalization in many of these reformist organizations and currents that could be attracted to the Fourth International. The first organizational step to build the Fourth International was taken in 23 at a congress, at a conference in Paris, and 14 organizations participated. Most of these organizations were centrist organizations, organizations moving in direction of Marxism. The left opposition participated, put forward its program, but they couldn't get a majority, they couldn't get a general agreement, but they produced what was called the Declaration of Four, a programmatical document that was signed by the left opposition, the German Socialistische Arbeiterpartei, SAP, and two Dutch organizations that agreed that there was a need to build a new international to fight for the Marxist idea and to fight for a proletarian organization. And from here on, the work to prepare the founding Congress of the Fourth International started. And it was finally formed in 38 with 23 delegates present. And the main program was, I think, also a very important document for our organization, for our comrades, the transitional program that first and foremost said the main, I don't remember the exact quote, but the main crisis of humanity is a crisis of leadership. What is needed is to take up the demands of the day of the workers and take up these demands and put them together with the struggle and the need for socialism, because all other organizations, they have this minimum program where they take up daily demands, and then they have the maximum program that they put in the drawer, and then they can write on their banner socialism, but it's never put together. And I think this is very obvious in many organizations, all workers' organizations today, that you have the demand for higher wages, which is important demands, but not if they stand alone. You have to also explain why it is linked to the fight for socialist society. And this was the foundation of the Fourth International, led here in 38. It was quite small. That didn't prevent some disagreements from existing. There were, I don't have much time, so I don't have time to go into it. There were some disagreements on the war policy. I hope maybe Alan will speak about it tomorrow when he speaks about our traditions, because it was very important discussions in our formation in Britain. But also one of the very important discussions was about the class nature of the Soviet Union. Because what the regime inside the Soviet Union was terrible. The workers did not have very good conditions. And that led, and that is also the case today, I think, on the left wing, many left wing, but also inside the left opposition, to say, we can't say it's a proletarian state, because the bureaucracy is acting like capitalists. They're just as vicious. But what Trotsky said was, it is because there is a nationalized economy, it is a proletarian state, but it's a proletarian Bonapartist state. It's not workers' democracy, and it's clear if there is no workers' democracy, it will collapse. You cannot have a planned economy without democracy, without workers' democracy. But we have to defend it, because the nationalized planned economy is progressive against all other forces. And if there is a world war, which they were sure would come, then we have to defend the Soviet Union against those who attack it. And on this, there was a split, for example, in the American section of the Fourth International. There's not much time, and I don't have that much left, more or less. The Third International more and more became an instrument for the foreign policy of the Soviet Union. It was clear that fascism was rising to power in more and more countries. Even then, they continued this crazy third period policy. In France, for example, in the beginning of 1934, the Communist Party said that the communists should go along in an armed demonstration with the Nazis. But there was an increasing realization inside the Soviet Union that fascism was a threat to the Soviet Union, and also there was an increasing pressure from below that they couldn't go along with the fascists, but they should fight them. And this led to a re-examination of this ultra-left third period policy in 1934-35. This was first aired in France, where the Social Democrats actually had appealed for the communists for a joint general strike against the fascists. And in the beginning, the Communist Party leadership had said no, because they were social fascists. But in the end, when the communist demonstrations were banned and so on, they accepted and went into joint action with the Social Democrats. Yes. The official re-evaluation of this policy came in 1938 at the 7th and last Congress of the Third International, 7 years after the previous Congress. And the most important issue was to fight against fascism. But the conclusion drawn after the third period was the complete opposite mistake, if you can say it like this, a complete caricature of the Leninist United Front tactic. Now it shouldn't be a united front against among the workers' organizations. It should be a united front with all progressive forces, all anti-fascist forces. That means with the liberal bourgeoisie, with everybody who was prepared to fight against fascism. And not just a united front in action, but a complete submission of the working class policy to the liberal bourgeoisie. So the Communist Party should not put forward a program of revolution, because that would scare away the progressive bourgeoisie. They should just limit themselves to the fight against fascism. And I don't have time, but this really had a devastating effect in France in 1936. There was a revolutionary ferment, and not least in Spain, in the Spanish Revolution, where the Stalinists, they deliberately, consciously defeated the Spanish Revolution. Trotsky said, and he wrote a lot about it, and it's really some good text, and he said, the Spanish workers could have made 10 revolutions. But what the Stalinists said, put forward, and this has been also really harmful later in Iran and other places, this two-state theory. First, we fight fascism, and then we discuss what we should put instead. And this and what Trotsky said was, you can't just fight against something. The working class, if they have to fight, they also have to fight for something. There should be a civil war inside the civil war, for the workers taking over the factories, the peasants taking over land. But what the Stalinists did, and they had a lot of weapons, which was needed in the Spanish Revolution, so their conditions for bringing weapons to the Spanish Revolution was follow our line of policy, was to actually demand that the workers gave back the factories they had occupied to the capitalists, the peasants gave back the land they had occupied to the landlords, and effectively destroying the revolution, letting Franco to power in 39, staying in a fascist dictatorship until the 70s, and also effectively leading to the Second World War and the complete onslaught of millions of people. Inside the Soviet Union, this was followed with the Moscow process, purchase? Yes. Where thousands, millions was killed. In these, all the old Bolsheviks were completely exterminated. In this period, where the Third International, where the Stalin saw fascism as a danger, they tried to create an alliance with the bourgeoisie in France and Britain, especially against the threat of fascism. This was also a reason why the Communist Party in France and Britain shouldn't fight for socialism, because that would upset the allies of the Soviet Union. But suddenly in 39, Stalin turned 180 degrees and made a pact, not with the devil, but with his brother on earth, Hitler, about not attacking each other, cynically dividing Poland, that the anti-fascist committees in these countries should be closed down, all communist underground activity in the fascist countries should cease. Hitler was handed over 570 wanted communists from the GPU that went straight to Auschwitz to be killed. And supporting Hitler, supporting fascism, supporting the invasion of Denmark, occupation of Denmark, for example, of Norway, and completely disorientating all communists and discrediting all communists in the whole world. But behind this lines, behind the surface, Hitler was planning an attack on the Soviet Union. Now he just had peace on the Eastern Front to attack the Western Front first, and then he could attack the Soviet Union. He was held by Stalin, who completely purged the Red Army of all its leading military personnel, so it was left completely leaderless in this period running up to the Second World War. And when Hitler attacked the Soviet Union in June of 41, Stalin completely panicked and went more or less absent from the scene in several weeks. It then became clear that the Third International had to make another 180-degree turn and seek an alliance with the Western European countries. And this was, if you read Ted's History of the British Trotskyism, for example, you can see how the communists suddenly, in Britain, for example, turned 180 degrees and became the strongest supporters of the war effort. If the workers went on strike, the communists would be scabs in order to support the production and help the war efforts of the British democracies against the fight against capitalism. So the Third International, the Comintern, completely bowed to imperialism. And it was especially American imperialism that demanded that the Third International, even though it had long ceased to be a tool for world revolution, should be disbanded as a security against world revolution. And Stalin agreed to this, and without any Congress, without any democratic decision, just dissolved the Third International in 43. And this was the end of what was, could have been, should have been, the tool for the working class in taking power.